Good evening. I want to thank each of you for coming to this hearing this evening of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. This is our first hearing this weekend. Last weekend, we were in Hermiston, Madras, and tomorrow we will be in Eugene, and next Friday we will be in Tillamook. So we are seeing a lot of the state. I'm going to talk a little bit in a moment about guidelines and the importance of those for this hearing. But first of all, I would like to have each of the members that are here at the table introduce themselves very briefly to identify where they're from. And I'm going to start at the far end of the house down here. You want to take the mic?
I can talk loud enough. On the record.
Paul Holvey, state representative from South Eugene, South Central, Lane County, House District 8.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having us here. My name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose.
Hi, everybody. I'm so pleased to see such a crowd tonight. I'm David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon coast. I represent from Yahats to Tillamook, which means that next Friday night we'll be having this meeting in my district.
Thank you. And I'm Pam Marsh. Happy to be home in here in Ashland, House District 5. Thank you so much for coming.
I don't want to follow that. Good evening. I'm Representative Greg Smith. I represent Eastern Oregon area, Milton Freewater, Hermiston, Morrow County, Gillam County, Sherman County, and the very, very best parts of Wasco County. Very quickly, later this evening, I'm going to have to leave a little bit early. Please excuse me. Please don't read into it. I just have a family commitment that I have to honor later this evening.
I'm Nancy Nathanson, state representative from North and downtown Eugene.
I'd like to welcome my fellow representatives and senators. I'm Senator Alan DeBoer, and it's nice to be home and to see so many familiar faces and people, so we'll love to listen to your comments.
Good evening and welcome here. First off, I'll give a shout out to all my veterans. Raise your hands, veterans. Boah. Thank you. Thank you. And welcome home. My name is James Manning, and I am state senator representing Senate District 7, which is Eugene and Junction City.
Hello. My name's Lou Frederick. I'm a senator from District 22. That's North and Northeast Portland. And I actually call Ashland my second home. So thank you.
Senator Arne Roblin from District 5, which goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and over into the valley at Sheridan Falls City. So,
My name is Bill Hansel. I'm a state senator in District 29, which is about as far away from here and still being in Oregon as you can be. My district starts at Hells Canyon in the northeast corner and then runs to the west to the Dalles Dam. I have six counties and half of Wasco County, and Greg and I share half of the district in that part of the state.
Good afternoon. I'm Jackie Winter, state senator, District 10, and I represent Salem, South Salem, West Salem, Almsville, Turner, and Monmouth and Independence.
I'm Betsy Johnson. I'm from Scappoose. I represent Senate District 16, North Tillamook County, Clatsop of Columbia, Multnomah County in the working waterfront, and parts of rural Washington County. And your trustee, Lynn Henyon, tells me this is a big night for SOU, so go Raiders.
I'm Senator Richard Devlin. I represent Lake Oswego, West Lynn, Tualatin, Lower Southwest Portland. And one thing I'd like to say here is I'd like to actually have a shout out for my former co-chair. Representative Nathanson is my current co-chair, and she does a great job. But I worked many years with Representative Buckley. So you will understand in a few moments why I will ask you to please keep the applause to an absolute minimum, perhaps none, for the rest of this hearing. The remaining portion of the guidelines are this. Basically, what I'm saying right now will not count towards the time in this hearing. We will conduct the hearing for 2 hours from the time I end this discussion. We will be calling up three people at a time up to the table here to testify, and then we will be calling up three people to be on deck in the chairs that are up here in the center aisle would be on your left. And as the three people come up to the table here, they should just start speaking, whoever sits down first, and then they should stay at the table until all three are completed, and the next three will come forward. You'll have 2 minutes each to testify, and I understand that sounds like an incredibly short period of time, but understand that 2 hours of testimony means we can get to somewhere around 60 people, and we hope to get to 70 or 75 or even more. One of the ways to do that is if you don't need the entire 2 minutes, don't use it all, because you'll be giving up time that we can actually be here to hear from other people. We will also be going from subject area to subject area, so all the testimony will just not be on one area of the budget. So we'll go back and forth. Finally, I would say this, and I said it at the beginning when I introduced myself, please do not applause, because every time you applause, it actually takes away time from the testimony, and it doesn't seem like a lot. But applause after every single person testifies probably robs 3, 4, 5, 6 people of the opportunity to speak before the committee. Finally, one of the things I'd say, if you don't get an opportunity to testify and you would like to actually submit testimony to the committee, I believe there are staff here. She will take any of your written testimony. You are actually free also, obviously, at any time to email us. Our email address is waysandmeans.budget@oregonlegislature.gov. Although actually, you just look up the Oregon Legislature, look for Ways and Means, and you'll find a way. All of us are online. All of us have web pages. You can get to us that way also. But I would like to just say we're very pleased for being here this evening, and I'm going to get started right away. And we will start off with the first three people to come up front: Mendy DeLong, Robert Alano, and Hugh, looks like Crawford. One is Revenue, one's Oregon Humanities, and one's Veterans. And then on deck will be Bill Lantis, Melissa McRobbie, and John Smith. Please begin.
Thank you. Co-chairs?
If I didn't check, my error, not... as you see over here, and I'll give you an extra 3 seconds. This is the timer here, and when we get to the end of the 2 minutes, it'll beep. So I'll have to go to the next person to testify. Please begin.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. Co-chair Devlin, members of the committee, welcome to SOU, where I've worked since 2010. My name is Robert Arellano, and I'm a professor at SOU, but I'm not here to talk about education. In my role as a board member of Oregon Humanities, I'd like to tell you a story that relates to economic development. I love that this is a listening tour. Why? Less than 12 months ago, I was in Cave Junction with 200 Oregonians gathered on a weeknight in April for an OH-sponsored conversation on our hidden black history. This was one of hundreds of such programs organized or facilitated in every corner of our state this past year by our official affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Together with coworkers and students from SOU, I experienced as strangers and neighbors talked, listened, learned, and sometimes cried together. And I said to myself, this is what it means when we say in our mission, we foster understanding and strengthen civic ties. And now here's where it gets interesting. The following night, the next stop on our tour brought the conversation to Cottage Grove. And as reported in the newspapers and on OPB, coordinators and volunteers were harassed and intimidated inside and out, while the mayor was in attendance questioning the legitimacy of the meeting and claiming there was no problem with racism in Cottage Grove. You might say it was in reverse order, but one night it worked and one night it didn't. This stuff works. It reduces violence. And by promoting peace, it stimulates the economy. Arts and culture programs like Oregon Humanities and its statewide partners, supported by the Oregon Cultural Trust, are the only ones doing it, and we do it very well. I don't have time to go into it, but we have one of the leanest and most efficient humanities councils in the nation. It's a small investment for a huge payoff. It pays to listen. Thank you for listening.
Good evening, and thank you for being here. My name is Mendy DeLong. I've been working with children and families in our Oregon communities for about 16 years. Currently, I've been with Jackson County Child Welfare for the last five. One thing I've learned is that child welfare, self-sufficiency, mental health addictions, early intervention services, all of us that come together and serve our children and families, keep the children and families safe. We depend on each other. I currently work with children that have no choice where they live. They have no choice where they go to school, and they have no choice in how they are treated. I see every day their parents struggle with mental health addictions. I see them struggle with poverty. I see them struggling with anything that might come into play in how they parent their children. We need to stick together, and we need to help them. It's our job to keep them fully functioning and putting them back into the communities together as whole families. I believe that our funding crisis is caused by the choice that Oregon has made to be last in the states with the funding towards corporate taxes. We are the lowest in the country, and Oregon continues to struggle every single year in providing services to our children and families. It is unacceptable. I want to close by saying I see my coworkers every single day work hard and tirelessly to protect our children. They are our children, not your children, their children, but our children. And we need your help. Thank you.
My name is Hugh Crawford. I'm with the Veterans of Foreign Wars, representing Veterans of Foreign Wars and other veterans in Oregon. We would like to ask our legislature to ensure that Oregon continues the responsibility to fund veterans from its general fund and to uphold Measure 96 and to supplement veterans funding through the 1.5% of the lottery money. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Will an S group please come forward? And while they are coming forward, could I have Gary Bedell, Karen Starvik, and Stephen Plant come forward. Please begin.
Members of the committee, my name is Bill Landis. I am the Public Safety Director in Chief for the Grants Pass Department of Public Safety. I'm also a local Public Safety Coordinating Council member for Josephine County. I'm speaking to you tonight regarding the proposed cuts to the Oregon State Police specific to their narcotics detectives who are assigned to drug task forces such as mine in Josephine County. I want to let you know that this would devastate law enforcement efforts to prevent the supply of narcotics, such as methamphetamine and heroin, into rural communities such as ours. I want to emphasize that this is not about marijuana, which is now legal and not the focus of narcotics task force investigations. The Rogue Area Drug Enforcement Raid Team consists of a supervisor from my agency, a detective from my agency, two OSP detectives, a deputy district attorney, and a member of our local parole and probation office. No sheriff's office representatives are on the team due to budget cuts. Since December 1st, 2016, the last 3 months, we have done the following: 27 initiated investigations, 19 arrests, 4.5 pounds of methamphetamine, 2.5 pounds of heroin, 8 grams of cocaine, 30 firearms, and a long list of stolen property recovered in that 3 month period. Again, all of this took place in that 3 months. The proposed cuts would mean that chiefs such as me would not have had the previously mentioned investigations and intercepted the large quantities of heroin and methamphetamine I just spoke of. The participation of the Oregon State Police with regards to our narcotics task force means that we can get the drug supplies before the drugs end up in our communities, whether the city or the surrounding county, as well as after the drugs make it to the streets. While the metro areas have many neighboring agencies that participate, rural communities such as ours do not. Please ensure that participation continues, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Melissa McRoby. I'm the local Public Safety Coordinating Council coordinator for Josephine County. And So our presiding judge, Lindy Baker, couldn't be here tonight, so I just wanted to briefly read a statement from her in support of an additional judgeship for Josephine County. Our county has four judges. We have had four judges since our last new judgeship was implemented in 1981. It's been 36 years. In 1981, our county population was 52,000. In 2015, it was 84,745, an increase of 61%. Our poverty level is 21.9%, tied for the third highest in the state and highest in all of Southern Oregon. And we have a higher than average retirement population. While our case filings change from year to year, total filings in just the past year have increased 24%. That includes a 53% increase in criminal filings, 46% increase in probate filings, and failure to appear warrants have increased 118% in the past year. The National Center for State Courts Workload Assessment Study of 2016 concluded that Josephine County is ranked number 2 in the state in need for additional judicial resources and number 3 in the state for additional statutorily authorized judicial positions. Josephine County needs a new judgeship. And now, switching hats a little bit, local public safety coordinating councils are key in deciding how justice reinvestment money is spent. And in Josephine County, for the 2015-2017 biennium, the county received $1.1 million in JRI funding. We're spending it on in-house drug treatment for jail inmates, a prosecutor focused on downward departures, transitional housing, mental health services in jail, victim services, and a drug court coordinator. These important programs are helping to steer offenders into recovery, stability, and crime-free productive lives.
I'm sorry. Next person. Okay. Please. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to introduce John Smith. He will share how he's benefited from JRI-funded programs.
Hi, I'm John. Before ever going into the secured treatment, my life was in complete shambles. I was fortunate enough that I had a good relationship with my PO, and I fell in a situation where I had a minimum 3 to 5 month wait to get into any kind of a treatment. And my life was in such a crisis situation where it was really life and death. I was known on a first name basis at the emergency room. And she got me into the secured treatment housing right away. That was my only option. I couldn't afford to wait, 3 to 5 months to get into treatment. And I was in there, I mentally and physically improved a lot. And then I was worried a lot about what my life was going to look like when I got out. And that's when I went into transitional housing. And there, all my basic needs were met. I was given clear-cut directions on what to do, and I did it. And everything that I did got results. Today, I'm in a position where I get to help those people that are coming out, give them rides, help them find jobs. And it's something I would like to continue to keep going, because there's a whole group of us that are still doing good this day from that secured treatment facility, because that's just where we, where we found it at. And, as far as now, I have a normal job, all of us do. I pay taxes like everyone else. I wasn't able to do that before. And what it's able to save as a community, everybody, from the cost of incarceration and just what it was costing the community with what we were doing prior to going into treatment, is a big, huge, it's a win for the people we're able to help. It gives us purpose, and it saves the taxpayers money at the same time.
Thank you. Next group, please come forward. And while they're coming forward, on deck will be Kimber Dollarhide, Michelle Glass, and Teresa Dean. Please begin.
Distinguished members of the Senate and the House, my name's Gary Bedell. I'm a local Jackson County citizen, the product of Eagle Point High School, and more importantly, I've been a volunteer with the local 4-H and FFA programs for the last 37 years. I'm here tonight to urge your strong support of House Bill 2382 and Senate Bill 230. I'd like to take a minute to ask all the young people in their blue FFA jackets to stand up, please. 37 years ago, I was one of them. Didn't have a clue where I was headed in life. Fortunately, I had two ag teachers who were outstanding that taught that if you worked hard, you were disciplined, you were respectful, you'd make a difference in life. For me and hundreds of others like me, old people who have been involved in business and the communities in Oregon for the last almost 40 years, we think the ask is simple, supporting that budget item. We do understand, though, that your mission is really difficult and that you have too few dollars to support too many things. The one thing I can tell you about the young people that stood up tonight is they're respectful, they work hard, they come from diverse backgrounds who really, really want to make a difference. Over the last 37 years, I've had the good fortune to volunteer with the FFA program where an average of 400 students a year have displayed and shown their vocational agricultural products, 20,000 kids with a community that supports them. These people are multiplied by every county in Oregon. Again, I'd like to urge your support for vocational agriculture and curriculum training. It's needed, especially today. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Starvik, before you start, I called up a Stephen Plant in this panel. Is he here? If he's not, I will not come back to him, so I guess not. Please go ahead and begin.
Chair Devlin, senators and representatives, thank you very much for providing this opportunity. I am Karen Starchvik, chair of the Medford School Board, and here we are again on the budget roller coaster. This feels like a soap opera. The actors change, the story remains the same. Where to cut? Oregon's over-reliance on personal income tax, coupled with the insane kicker law, creates a very volatile tax structure, inadequate reserves, and unstable funding for basics like education and healthcare. I know many of you did not support Measure 97, but I also heard that if 97 failed, you would come to the table with a balanced tax and PERS reform proposal. Where is the grand bargain we were promised? Medford has made some amazing progress the past few years. Our graduation rates are up 12%, so are smarter balanced results across the board. Gains in student populations, including economically disadvantaged, Hispanic, special education, limited English proficiency, all outpace the gains elsewhere in the district, and our achievement gap is closing. There isn't one single solution for closing the gap and boosting graduation rates, or Oregon would have mandated it by now. But the district invested in programs that engage students in school, like elementary music and PE, and academic and career pathways in secondary. We made a deliberate move to lower class sizes to the statewide average, which is still the second highest in the nation. We stepped up mentoring programs like Check and Connect and wraparound services like the Maslow Project. And we implemented strategies and invested in programs that ensure kids attend school, pass their classes, and are on track to graduate. Our freshman on track rate went from 71 to 83% in just 2 years. Now we're facing a $3 million budget deficit. Which of the above programs do you think we should cut? PE, elementary music? We'd have to cut all that and raise class sizes in order to close a $3 million gap.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The next group, please come forward. And while they are coming forward, I haven't called this group yet, have I? Okay. I did. Okay. On deck then will be Robert Mulcair, Barbara Richard, and Eric Foster. Please begin.
So my name is Teresa Dean. I've lived in the Rogue Valley since 2004. This is my son, Luca. And Luca is 14 years old, and he experiences autism. He was diagnosed just before the age of two, and we were immediately connected with the folks at Developmental Disability Services. They have walked alongside my family from then until now. They have provided vital services to my family. They provided respite hours. They've assisted with equipment purchases. They have provided crisis services when my son's behavior became extremely challenging. They provide personal support workers, residential group home placement, and fierce advocacy and case management. My son was able to stay at home with my family despite some very challenging years because of the services that we received. Several months ago, and after a lot of emergency room visits, later, we made the difficult decision to place my son's care in the hands of others. He's currently living in a group home in Salem as we await local placement. There are no openings. He's been there since December. Our story is not unique, and there are so many families who depend on these vital services. So I urge you, at a very minimum, to continue the current funding levels for developmental disability services and consider that the investment that you make to these services dictates the quality of the staff and the care that my son receives. Thank you for your attention.
Hello, my name is Kimber Dollarhide with Jackson County Developmental Disabilities. I know you all agree that people with intellectual or developmental disabilities are the most successful in their communities when they have access to a variety of services that embrace the diversity of people's needs and goals across their lifespan. Yet if DD Services case management is not continued to be funded at 95% equity, the loss of funding to DD Services, would devastate the families that we serve. In Jackson County, the children's team currently serves 572 families. That means on average, I have 75 plus families as a case manager that I deal with on a monthly basis. These services benefit Oregonians who stay in their homes. We provide K-plan services, and these services benefit them to stay in their homes and remain independent. At the same time, it saves both state and federal government money because we're providing more extensive home and community-based long-term services in lieu of more expensive institutional care. Help me. Become the voice of these children in Salem. Cutting funding from children who didn't do anything wrong other than being born with a disability is not going to fix the budget. It will only increase the cost of hospital stays, jails, and cases in child welfare. If you cut the budget for DD services and the number of families continue to grow, there is a decrease in case managers like me. We love our job, and I love my families, and it's been an honor to serve them. But I'm drowning, and they deserve better. Thank you.
Co-chairs Nathanson and Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Michelle Glass, and I am the regional director for Unite Oregon in our Medford office for the Southern Oregon region. I'm also a Southern Oregon University alumni, and I've dedicated the last decade of my life to doing community work on local issues here in Southern Oregon. Over the past few years, my organization has provided outreach and enrollment support to Oregon Health Plan members. And I've seen firsthand how much health care coverage helps rural families overcome economic hardship. I'm here to share my support and Unite Oregon's support of prioritizing funding for House Bill 2726 and Senate Bill 558, Cover All Kids. Cover All Kids looks to extend the Health Care for All Children of Oregon Act to all children in Oregon. We know that Medicaid-eligible children have higher incomes later in life and are more likely to surpass their family's economic status as adults. But what about more direct returns on investment? We know that each year of Medicaid eligibility for children ages 0 to 18 increased tax payments in adulthood by $186 per person. These increases returned one-third of the initial expansion costs by the time the child was 28. We should be empowering all children to be the best they can be. We know we can do this because when children are healthy, they grow up to be productive citizens in our communities. Even in this difficult budget environment, we as Oregonians have always believed in prioritizing Oregon's most vulnerable. This includes our children and their health. HB 2726 and SB 558 are key to ensuring our children receive the health care they need to thrive and avoid costs now and into the future.
Thank you. Now, if the next group will please come forward. And while they are coming forward, I'm going to call up Terry Thiem, Sean Franks, and Kevin Talbert. Please begin.
My name is Barbara Richard. Welcome to GMO-free Jackson County. And thank you for including us as part of your listening tour. Many of you have heard about the escaped genetically engineered creeping bentgrass that has rooted itself in Jefferson and Malheur counties. It's currently causing a financial burden to farmers and irrigation districts. It's only a matter of time before this rogue GE bentgrass contaminates state-owned land. I'm wondering if you've set aside any funds to handle those inevitable future expenses. Representative Barnhart has introduced a bill this session, House Bill 2739, that addresses the financial harm caused by GE contamination. The bill offers a practical approach to dealing with GE contamination and requires no expenditure. I urge you to review and support House Bill 2739. Have you included any funds in this budget to help eradicate GE bentgrass in Oregon?
I don't know what that is. That's not the timer. I don't know. Yeah. Please continue if you had more. What is? I don't know what the...
You can continue speaking.
You're completed. Please begin, then. Thank you very much.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Robert Mulcair. I am a new public safety coordinator for Klamath and Lake County. I am attached to the local public safety coordinating councils in each of those counties. I wanted to take some time and speak about the justice reinvestment funding and the budget shortfall that we are going to experience this next biennium. I wanted to specifically talk about the effects on Lake County, as I have other delegates from Klamath County that'll talk more about their programs. In Lake County, we use the JRI funds to fund a specialty treatment court to focus on drug abuse. Since we started the program in April of 2015, we have served 36 different clients. 9 of them have graduated the program, and out of that 36, only 2 of them have had their parole or probation revoked and have been sent to prison. With the JRI funds and by cutting those, Lake County would lose this program, which means all 36 of those clients would have ended up either in prison or on felony probation, which would have led to a higher increased cost to either send them to prison or supervise them. In addition to the JRI funds used for that, we also utilize them to provide a wide range of services and programs to offenders in their population. Again, cutting those funds would mean Lake County would lose all of those services. What we are asking is for you to fund JRI at the full $52.7 million that was asked. This figure is developed from the avoided cost of operating the prison and what we have shown JRI works to reduce the prison population. We also ask that you continue funding for local programs that support reentry, diversion, treatment, and victim services. JRI is a program that continues to work and has avoided the state having to build a new penitentiary at the cost of $140 million. We also ask that you support other direct county grants related to community corrections, juvenile crime prevention, and diversion. We also ask that you protect OSP funding and the basic police training funding. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Nathanson and Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Eric Foster.
I'm an attorney with the law firm of Foster Denman in Medford, and I'm currently serving as a member of the Oregon State Bar's Board of Governors. I'm appearing before you today to talk about the bar's three main budget priorities for 2017 legislative session: adequate funding for the courts, low-income legal services, and indigent defense. Oregon's court system touches the lives of thousands of Oregonians every day. The courts protect the rights of crime victims, stabilize families in crisis, and keep businesses running smoothly. The public expects that when the need arises, the court system will be there for them. Courts cannot adequately serve the public without the legislature's power of the purse. For this reason, we ask you to fund the Oregon Judicial Department sufficiently to keep courts fully operational during business hours, 5 days a week. Continue funding for ongoing operations of Oregon eCourt, and which was successfully completed this past year, and continue to work with the Judicial Department to provide good facilities for counties with the greatest facilities needs. And as we know, counties in Southern Oregon are significantly impacted by this. It is important that we continue to support the provision of civil legal services to low-income Oregonians. And finally, I ask the legislature to continue to support funding for indigent defense services in criminal cases. That indigent defense funding impacts those people who are in the most difficult socioeconomic situations in our community, and I would really appreciate it if the legislature would support them. Thanks.
Thank you. Please come forward. And while they're coming forward, could Sue Crater, Sharon Hardy, and Carol Conlon come forward on deck? Please begin.
Hello, thank you for being here this evening. My name is Terry Thiem, and I am here to talk about the House bills regarding rental housing that are on the docks. I have been in the business for about 17 years, and it is a business. There's good times, there's bad times. During 2008 to 2011, we had vacancies. People had lost their jobs. We had to drop rent $200 a month. They were vacant for 6 months. So I understand there's good times and bad times. But what is trying to be passed are extremes. There are certain tools in every business that we need to succeed. To make something 90 days before a person can move or has to move, you know, have no idea the damage they can do if they just act no matter what the reason that we've asked them to move. It's our fault. They could not have paid rent for 3 months. It's still my fault. BBs in walls, kicking in walls, those are the things that you may not hear about all the time. Okay, and so I am just asking for a little wisdom here in passing these house bills, because I live on this. My mother-in-law is a widow. She lives on rentals. They pay the taxes. They pay the insurance. Even to put a cap on rent, you say only so much. Well, what about the insurance and the utilities and the taxes that go up every year? I'm asking that you look at both sides of the coin. That's all. Thank you very much.
Senator Devlin, Representative Nathanson, legislators, thank you for taking the time to come so far from Salem to Southern Oregon to listen to our concerns. My name is Kevin Talbert, and I live in rural Jackson County. I'm here to advocate for Oregon State University statewide public service programs, the Extension Service, our Agricultural Experiment Station, and our Forest Research Laboratory. Specifically, I'm asking you to support Senate Bill 805. Thank you, Senator Roblin and others, for that sponsorship. Besides essential services to important Southern Oregon industries like forest products, orchards, and viticulture, our local extension programs serve small woodlot owners, youth development with programs like 4-H. public health, nutrition, food safety, and so much more, helping to cope with water issues, invasive species, and promoting small farms are just a few of the many essential services we provide. OSU programs are an essential part of our regional and local economic development. As a rural Jackson County resident, I have personally benefited from the Master Gardener and Land Steward programs. Like so many others, among other things, I learned to create defensible fire spaces for my rural property and how to grow sustainable, healthy food. And now, like so many others, I give back volunteer time, hundreds of hours in the plant clinic over the years, using the skills that I learned through extension. OSU statewide programs leverage the investment you make in our region. I well understand the legislature is faced with many conflicting demands, but I urge you to find a way to restore funding for statewide public service programs by passing Senate Bill 805. If Oregon is to address the growing disparity, economic disparity, between urban and rural Oregon, there's no better investment than these OSU statewide programs. Thank you for your consideration.
New members of the committee, thank you for being here. My name is Sean Franks. I'm currently working with True South Solar and representing one of the members of the Oregon Solar Energy Industry Association. And I want to ask you to please extend the Renewable Energy Tax Credit, or the RETC. The Renewable Energy Tax Credit, as you know, is set to expire this year. And since 1978, over 10,000 solar PV projects have received tax credits that allow households to save money and develop renewable energy resources throughout the state. This accounts for over 30 megawatts dispersed throughout the state, and the RETC is typically combined with other incentives, both federal and utility incentives. The solar industry in Oregon is growing, but it isn't quite ready to stand on its own without state support. If the RETC is extended, companies like True South Solar can continue to develop local jobs and value right here in our community. So I'm here to ask you, please extend the Renewable Energy Tax Credit. Thank you.
Before this group gets up, I'd just like to thank former Senator Talbert. Your service may have been short, but you served with grace and integrity. Will the next group please come forward? On deck will be, I guess it's Eliza Collins, Trace Jensen, and Becca Gilby. Please begin.
Okay. Members of the committee, thank you for coming to listen to what is most important to your citizens. My name is Sue Crater. I'm the Executive Director of Ashland Supportive Housing and Community Outreach. We provide 24-hour residential services and community-based support services for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We've been doing this in Ashland since 1982. I've been doing this since 2002. It's becoming increasingly difficult to provide quality services to what really is our most vulnerable citizens. We work with individuals with autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, fetal alcohol syndrome, and a whole host of other intellectual and developmental disabilities. The work is difficult. My staff, my direct support professionals, are required to be experts in behaviors, to be experts in a variety of medical conditions, diabetes, physical conditions. They're required to monitor these conditions. They're required to dispense medications. They're required to know what medications they're dispensing and what interactive effects these medications have. They have to document everything they do. They have to care, and they have to care deeply, and they do. They do this for an average wage of $11.23 an hour. That is not a professional wage for what truly is a profession. What I am finding is that it's increasingly difficult to find and hire good staff to maintain those staff at that wage. I have several staff who would be here tonight, except they're working their second or sometimes third jobs just to support themselves. I would ask that you, keep in mind our most vulnerable citizens when you're looking at the budget. And if you can't raise wages, at least don't cut us.
Please proceed.
Hello. My name is Sharon Hardy, and I've raised my two grandsons who have developmental disabilities from the time that they were babies. One of them in particular was in pretty bad shape when I got him, and it was very difficult. 4 years ago, I asked the state for a caregiver for 8 hours a day so that I could keep working, and I was told that they did not have enough money to provide us with a caregiver. They said they were only able to provide 20 hours of respite care a month, so I was forced to put him in a group home. It was really hard because he would call me crying and begging to come home. A couple of months after he went in there, I had to sign some papers, and I was informed that the group home was being paid $15,000 a month. And I couldn't believe it because it wouldn't have cost that much for him to be at home with a caregiver. I asked the person from the agency, why would they give you that kind of money when they wouldn't help us? And he said, that's just how the system works. Well, the system doesn't work. It doesn't work for families. I don't think that I'm the only one that wants to keep my child at home. Nobody's going to love him the way that I do. Nobody's going to care for him the way that I do. I'm imploring you not to cut the funding for services, and I'm asking you to find the courage to raise revenue so that Oregonians like my grandson can start receiving the support that they need to stay at home where they will be cared for and loved. It's not okay to tear families apart. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please.
Good evening. My name is Carol Conlon. I'm the mother of an adult child with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and I'm also an advocate for the disabled. After over 15 years of caring for an adult with IDD, I began encountering families with similar challenges. I began learning to navigate the system both for my son as well as for some of these families and the people they care for. Now I act as an informal advocate for families in the area. In working with these families, I have seen how the essential services are in maintaining their loved ones' quality of life and meeting their daily needs. One woman I advocated for cares for her disabled adult son in her home. Her whole life has been geared towards keeping him at home where he thrives. Because his needs are so extreme, this program of in-home supports saves the state hundreds of thousands of dollars a year by keeping him out of a facility. This mother I advocated for is convinced that if he was not able to receive care at home, not only would his quality of life be greatly diminished, but he would not physically survive. Because he is nonverbal, he relies on his mom and his trained in-home caregivers to understand his gestures and sounds. Cutting funding to long-term care services for the in-home supports will harm the most fragile people in our community and will end up creating negative outcomes such as higher cost placement in group homes, nursing homes, and unnecessary hospitalizations. At a time of record corporate profits, it is a travesty that we are even considering cutting services to the most vulnerable members of our communities. Please increase revenues instead of implementing cuts. Thank you.
Thank you. Next group, please come forward. And while they are coming forward, if Michael Donovan could come forward, Sherry Morgan, and Kev Alexanian, please begin.
Hi, my name is Becca Gilbert, and thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of Outdoor School. I'm excited and proud that Measure 99 passed this November. We earned 67% of the vote in 34 of 36 counties in Oregon. I personally worked as a field instructor at Camp Tamarack, an outdoor school in Central Oregon, for a season in fall of 2015. I was a new Oregonian at that time, and I had no idea what type of impact outdoor school had on our state as a whole. It took no time really to learn that outdoor school unites our state in a way that no other state investment can. We had students from all over Central Oregon come to a place where they felt safe and supported, and they learned in a way that was new and fresh to them instead of being inside four walls of a classroom. Their faces would light up, and students touched and interacted with nature while they learned about plants and fire and water and animal field studies. I spoke with a lot of parents of students who also recalled their outdoor school experience from when they were younger, and I heard a lot of stories on our campaign trail about the way that this experience impacted people from senior citizens to teenagers to kids all over the state. So giving every student this opportunity to experience learning about our natural resources in the outdoors is so important, and the fact that outdoor school teaches life skills and gives us a larger sense of what it means to be an Oregonian is very important, and I urge all of you to allocate the funding that was directed by the voters so that all Oregon sixth graders can attend outdoor school. Thank you.
Thank you. Please.
I'd like to say thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Eliza Collins. I'm a student here at SOU, and I worked at Outdoor School for 2 years. During my time at Outdoor School, I developed a passion for leadership and education, and I attribute my college career here at SOU to my experience at Outdoor School. I also got to see high schoolers that came out to work at Outdoor School find that same passion and opportunity and wanting for I think one of the most impactful things about working at Outdoor School was seeing the difference that it made in the lives of the kids. I can remember multiple times when teachers would tear up and tell us that they saw kids who weren't as successful in the classroom setting become successful at Outdoor School. The kids at Outdoor School developed an excitement for education and adventure, and they realized that these things were one and the same. And after my experience, I can say that this hands-on learning that Outdoor School gives kids an opportunity to is not an extra, but something that is essential to education. Thank you.
Hello. So I'll start by adding my voice to all the others who have said thank you for giving us the opportunity to weigh in on statewide issues closer to home. My name is Tracy Jensen. I'm the proud mother of two adult children with autism. As a single mom, we often lived at the poverty level, and we lived well because our needs were usually met. We lived within our means. But when hard times hit, I did what any good parent would do, and I got a second job so I could add to our means. Their father was also always supportive, as was allowed by his own self-employment RC airplane business. You won't catch me dissing their dad. So Rogue River Schools served my children exceptionally well, and I'm returning their investment by serving on the school board, which I've done since June of 2001. I'm also an education employee. I work for the Southern Oregon Educational Service District in the STEPS program. Currently, I serve medically fragile students at Crater High School. I'm a member of both OSBA
and OSEA. So I have a different dimension to my perspective. I've been coming to meetings like this for about 16 years now, and there's something I want to tell you. School districts don't waste or hide money, and those so-called greedy unions are not sucking districts dry either. And I lost my place. Sorry. But I keep hearing, over the 16 years, I keep hearing we need to live within our means. But the problem is, like my own financial struggles, the means are simply not enough. Not enough to fulfill a good educational system, let alone a great one. And the quality education model.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Will the next group please come forward? I assume Ms. Morgan.
Yes.
And are you Mr. Donovan or?
Mr. Donovan. Alexanian.
Okay.
Mr. Donovan's not here, I don't believe.
Okay. Then I'm going to call up to be a part of this panel, if he'll be come up forward, Ron Fox. And you can go ahead and start. Ron Fox, if he's here, please start. And then on before you start, on deck will be Derek Sherrill, Kevin Waldruff, and Kiki Parker-Rose.
Good afternoon. My name is Cheryl Morgan, and I'm here speaking in support of the continuing service funding for the Oregon State Public Service programs. Kevin already talked a little bit about them, so I will emphasize a few other things. My personal experience is with the Master Gardener program, and I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, but we train about 75 Master Gardeners in Jackson County every year, and throughout the state there are over 3,000 Master Gardeners who give thousands, somebody figured out 215,000 volunteer hours every year. We have programs that support kids in gardening. We have a program out of OSU, thank you, Representative Gomberg, called Seed to Supper, which is geared toward helping low-income families learn how to produce food on their own, grow food on their own. And we're very proud that we also are contributing to the economy of this region. We figure that every dollar that goes into our program can be leveraged about 10 times by federal grants and contracts and expanded economy. We put on the Spring Garden Fair every year. We train community members in our community classes and at our symposiums, and we support the economy through providing a vehicle for nurseries and other garden-related businesses to sell at Spring Garden Fair. The Seed to Supper program is one we're really proud of, so we really would like to ask for your support. There is a bicameral bipartisan bill that's been put forward. Kevin mentioned it. It's a Senate Bill 805, which would provide continuing service level funding so that we could continue to provide all those services to the county. Thank you.
Thank you.
Howdy. My name's Kev Alexanian. I'm the weedmaster for Crook County. I've been at that post for 26 years. I currently work in 8 counties in Oregon, and I work for 4 federal agencies. That's a lousy way to run a county program, but at least I've got one. There are several counties in Oregon with no program at all, and the problem being is there's no base funding for those programs. House Bill 2043 would allow for that kind of base funding, which would help perpetuate and improve existing programs and allow for the development of new ones. These are big bang for the buck programs with a return or a cost-benefit ratio of about 34-1. That's pretty darn good. Also, they do an extremely effective job of protecting Oregon's natural resources, agriculture, range, and native species. All are protected and are benefiting from these programs. There are those who would say, well, they're county programs. What's that have to do with the rest of Oregon? Well, noxious weeds have a very poor understanding of political boundaries. You think it's my problem and not yours? Blink. Also, this bill would also help reinstate the biological control program for the Oregon Department of Agriculture. When there's so much clamoring for a reduction on the use of herbicides, we just lost our second best tool in the arsenal. That is the best alternative we have for the use of pesticides and is biocontrols. And we'd like to see that reinstated, and House Bill 2043 would do that. And for the reasons I've given, I support this House bill, and I strongly urge this committee to do the same. Thank you for listening.
Good afternoon, Senator Devlin and Representative Nathanson. My name is Ron Fox. I'm here tonight representing Rogue Community College. I'm a board member on Rogue Community College. I've spent the last 26 years working on economic development issues, multi-state, state of Oregon, and for the last 10 years here in Southern Oregon. In that 26 years, I have never seen a period of time when the businesses that are a part of our economy are crying as desperately as they are today for skilled and ready-to-work individuals. Our economy has recovered since the 2008-2009 recession, but businesses in our region are finding it difficult, if not impossible. We have three key sectors in our economy that we are focused on: the health sector, advanced manufacturing, and electronic commerce and IT. All three of those sectors are facing a dearth of skilled and ready to work. Community colleges are your asset for meeting those needs. Rogue Community College has been working in this region for many, many years. We've been working diligently to expand that capacity. There are over 400 manufacturing firms in Southern Oregon. There's probably another 200 or 300 electronic and commerce businesses and a multitude of healthcare. Through those industries, there are hundreds of jobs that are on the docket but unable to be filled, good-paying jobs that need the assistance of a community college education to be successful. Rogue Community College is working closely with our employers to design programs that will meet those needs. In May of this year, our generous supporters in our district supported a bond measure that is allowing the college to invest in the physical capacities to enhance the training and education of those future workers. We need your support in helping us match the tuition, grants, and other sources that students use to pay their community college funding. And thank you very much.
Next group, please come forward. And while they are coming forward, on deck will be Rael Kaya on mental health treatment, Adam Peterson, and Manna Underwood.
Committee, thank you for this time. My name is Kevin Woolruff. I'm a retired law enforcement officer of the state of Oregon after 26 years. I am a former HIDTA task force commander, which is a drug task force, and I am also a board member for the Oregon Narcotics Enforcement Officers. I come here today in regards to public safety and the support to our single academy that we have in this state. One of the challenges for law enforcement agencies today are recruiting and retention and training. And I think if you look nationwide at some of the problems that we've had with law enforcement, it comes down to a training issue. We currently have right now a bottleneck with getting new officers through that academy and get them trained. There are probably very few agencies in the state of Oregon that aren't still looking for officers. Any reductions to that budget could make that bottleneck even more. My second area here is in support of the Oregon State Police and the fine people that do that work there and their high standards, specifically their drug enforcement section. In the state of Oregon, through the Office of Drug Control and Policy out of Washington, D.C., through our HIDAs, have targeted methamphetamine and heroin, opiates, as being our number one and very close second, number two, opiates, as our threats in the state of Oregon. Those are also the two leading drugs right next to prescription drugs for drug-related deaths in the state of Oregon. With the reduction of the DES program with Oregon State Police, we are at risk of losing possibly six task force that they participate in, those being in Josephine County, Coos Bay, Lane County, Klamath County, Polk County, and Yamhill County. Without the support of the Oregon State Police and those officers that help other officers work together and reach out statewide as well as to the other states, those task force will go unchecked.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Oregon Legislative Assembly, Budget Writing Joint Ways and Means Committee. My name is Kiki Parker-Rose. I'm the director of Klamath County Community Corrections. I've been the director for about 10 years, and I've been employed with Klamath County for nearly 25 years. I wish to relay to you the success of Senate Bill 1145, created during the 1995 legislative session, as evidenced statewide in many ways through effective local programs, cost-effective interventions, and sanctions. The community correction system that has grown as a result of Senate Bill 1145 has two critical benefits for the state. First, our system improves public safety by lowering recidivism, which means fewer victims of crime in our communities. Second, we save taxpayers money both through improved public safety outcomes and cost avoidance. Oregon's community correction system reduces our use of the most expensive prison and jails, reserving prison for the most serious offenders while still keeping the community safe. The governor's balanced budget does not provide current service level for funding for community corrections and triggers opt-out. Today, I'm asking you to fully fund the community corrections budget because of our public safety track record and remind the committee that we are one of the few systems you can support that you know will save the state money in these budget-strained times. We also ask you to consider the unintended consequences and costs associated with a funding reduction triggering opt-out discussions in counties across the state. Community corrections funding, the governor's budget is $239 million. The actual amount for community corrections is $272 million. Their proposed budget and workload reductions would directly impact positions, services, programmings, and other agencies funded by community corrections dollars. It would reduce the number of people receiving supervision and wraparound services.
Thank you very much. Good evening, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Derek. Welcome to our community. We thank you for your service. We thank you for coming down. I'm proud to be an Oregonian right now, so thank you. I'm here on behalf of Kingsley Field Fire Department, where I'm a firefighter, and I realize stuff is really tight. I've heard everybody's testimony tonight. If I were to rack them and stack them myself, I know we wouldn't be at the top. Our deficit is in the billions. As part of the governor's 10% reduction, they have taken 100% of our $1.4 million state funds for the biennium for our department and Portland Air National Guard's fire department, around 50 firefighters. This $1.4 million for the biennium, we can take a little bit out of that. We'll play ball. We want to help. We can take a reduction. But I ask that you please don't cut us 100%. This isn't money that goes to big red apparatus and equipment. This is jobs. This is people that you want in your community, people that you want in your state. We're not perfect, but we're hardworking, and we're really, really thankful for the money that we do have. And if you can please take another look at that this year, we'd appreciate it. Most of your offices have maybe seen some talking points from our department, so I'd like to save the time for others. Thank you.
Please come forward. And while they're coming forward, I will call up Margaret Moore, Kate Kennedy, and Kim Hosford. That's Hosford. Please come forward. Please begin.
I'm Rael Kaya, a mental health counselor with Jackson County Health and Human Services. I provide psychotherapy to OHP Medicaid patients in Jackson County who suffer from mental health disorders, and I'm here to demand no more cuts to mental health treatment in Oregon. Every day, I see the impact of funding being ripped away from my clients as they burst into tears, fight off panic attacks and re-traumatization due to the prospect of losing their mental health care. Oregon Health Authority is currently allowing AllCare, a for-profit CCO, to withdraw from its duty to provide continuous mental health services to their members in Jackson County. AllCare is walking away with $13 million in private profits that come from taxpayer money, slated to fund critical services. Because of the actions of AllCare and the Oregon Health Authority, my workplace, Jackson County Health and Human Services, will be forced to lay off 200 mental health workers, which is not only a blow to our local economy and the tax base, but will leave thousands of vulnerable OHP members without access to mental health care. This reckless course of action will snowball throughout the community with devastating consequences. Increased rates of substance abuse, joblessness, crimes and arrests, domestic and child abuse, homelessness, hospitalization, and suicides. People will die. Oregon Health Authority is allowing AllCare to convert what funding we do have into private profits, leaving Oregon families stranded without mental health care. This graft and corruption must stop. In addition, the state of Oregon must meet its funding obligations to Medicaid clients by requiring Oregon corporations to pay their fair share of taxes. It's time to make a choice between the private bank accounts of unaccountable corporate board members and the health and well-being of our communities and regular Oregonians. Thank you.
Hello, and thank you. My name is Adam Peterson, and I work for the State of Oregon DHS Child Welfare. I'm the lead addictions recovery team worker for the Jackson County branch, and I have a caseload of teens with the ongoing permanency unit. I'm here to urge the Ways and Means Committee to hear the voice of child welfare and the families that we serve. Child welfare continues to run understaffed with high caseloads. New workers struggle to learn the work even after the limited training because they're quickly assigned caseloads, and seasoned workers must juggle peer teaching with their crises and emergencies that they must respond to. Many workers struggle with impossibly high caseloads, which invariably leads to low monitoring and places children in imminent danger. Difficulty searching for family, less time for individualized case planning, overflow in a community foster care, and safety plan failure are just some of the ways that this crisis harms our families. Identifying the problems and the safety threats are just one step. If workers do not have the time and resources to work with families and alleviate a crisis, only lead to removal of families, removal of children, relapse of mental health and substance abuse, it ends up splitting up families. We see reentry, poor outcomes for teens in my unit, just as a long-term result. Child welfare workers work at an intersection of all vulnerabilities: substance abuse, domestic violence, mental illness, sexual assault, poverty, and homelessness are just the beginning. These are the complex issues, and the message that the Oregon people receive from cutting programs like ours is that either there is no answer for these people or the solution is unimportant. I strongly urge this committee to give our community the tools that we need to keep children safe, keep cases manageable for the thoughtful and individualized case planning, and protect the workers from the burnout that occurs when child welfare workers are asked to complete a very difficult job at an impossible pace. Please choose the safety of our families and children who are already suffered abuse and neglect. Choose the families I work with and ask corporation to pay their share.
Hello, my name is Maria Ramos Underwood, and I live here in Jackson County. I live in Medford, and I'm here to encourage you to support Cover All Kids. I understand that you have been dealing with this issue for the last 3 years, so I'm sure you're well-versed on all the benefits of covering low-income children. And my colleague, Michelle Glass, did a really, really good job earlier of stating the benefits of doing so. So I want to use the rest of my time to tell you that this is the first time I've been to one of these hearings. And I want to talk about the elephant in the room and how uncomfortable I've been listening to everybody talk about the needs in this community. And we have a system that pits healthcare against education, against law enforcement, against, you can add all of the list up. I lost count of how many different subject areas people have presented on. And so I'm here to encourage you to think of a different way. Instead of asking all of these people to come with their hands out, trying to find the most compelling stories to convince you to fund their program at the cost of another program, that seems crazy to me. So please, as you consider how to balance a budget and how to fund all of these programs, I urge you to consider new revenue. Thank you.
Please. The next group will please come forward. And while they are coming forward, I'd like to call up Lance Colburn, Ian Noms wants to speak about HB. Well, it can't be an HB.
I think it might be Sean. Sean,
and it looks like Naumes. problem is we don't have any bills that have those numbers that are that short. and Margaret looks like more. Oh, you're already here. That's interesting, but that's okay. Please proceed.
Thank you all for being here and for listening. I'm Kate Kennedy, and I'm a veteran teacher here at Ashland High School, and I'm here to speak for teachers and, more importantly, for students. Oregon must increase revenue to support schools and the services that are critical to our families. That is so important, I'm going to say it again. Oregon must increase revenue to support schools and the services that are critical to Oregon families. Oregon has the lowest corporate taxes in the nation. Right? When I was hired in 1990, I taught 100 students in 5 classes. This year, I had 180 students in 6 classes. 1990 is a long time ago. I am old, right? But I was here right before Measure 5 was passed. Measure 5, the property tax limitation measure in Oregon, was passed with the idea that those funds would be replaced, and they have not been. That is not fair. So in my entire career as an educator has been spent dealing with budget shortfalls, right? With reductions in force, with increasing class sizes. My daughter, who graduated from Ashland Schools, is becoming a teacher, and I'm very proud of her. And my grandson will be in the public schools in no time. I want them to have world-class public schools. It is incredibly important for the economic development of Oregon that we continue to produce world-class students and teachers. So I implore you to increase revenue for the services that are critical to Oregon families and to public education. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. My name is Kim Hosford. I'm a school psychologist with the Southern Oregon Education Service District, and I have the pleasure of serving in the Ashland School District. I'm here to urge the legislature, you all, to value Oregon's children and the future of our state by moving them to the head of the line through appropriately and substantially funding Oregon schools and the ESDs that support them. You know the statistics. Oregon ranks 47th out of 50 states in high school graduation rates. We have the third highest class sizes in the nation. And while we want and need to graduate higher percentages of students with the governor's budget proposal that won't even address roll-up costs, no, there is no way to meet these unfunded mandates of the ballot measures 98 and 99. What I know from working in Oregon schools for the past 20 years is this. Things are very different. Adverse childhood experiences, the ACEs study, trauma is real. It's happening, and it's affecting higher and higher percentages of our students. We know that Oregon, that out of the 50 states, Oregon has one of the highest percentages of children with high ACEs scores. That means more of our kids are at risk for chronic health issues, behavior, academic, and social-emotional problems, and a reduced overall life expectancy. Children who experience significant mental health issues are on the rise, and they come with high-intensity behavior challenges. By that, I mean kids who try to stab you with pencils and scissors. They rip up floors. They destroy windows and break doors with chairs. They urinate and defecate on the floor, and they smear it on the walls. These things are real. These are what we're dealing with, and we need better funding so we can support these students adequately. We have many things on the rise, and what I'd like to say is I understand and respect that you have to consider a vast array of these needs and that all of them are valid. What I'd like you to hear is that education intersects all of these things, and while children are not required to seek mental or other health care, they are required to attend school. So please look for other funding mechanisms to support schools.
Thank you. Next, please.
My name is Margaret Moore. I am a first grade teacher in the Medford School District, and I'm here to urge you to prevent further cuts to education and fully fund wraparound services such as school counseling, community mental health counseling, behavioral therapy, family crisis response, social work services, in order to best support a productive learning environment in the public school classrooms. Sadly, more children than ever are affected by trauma. These experiences, known as adverse childhood experiences or ACEs, can include substance abuse in the home, parental separation or divorce, mental illness in the home, witnessing domestic violence, a suicidal household member, death of a loved one, parental incarceration, and experience of abuse or neglect. Studies confirm that ACEs have a powerful negative effect on students' readiness to learn, and that the more ACEs a child has, the more likely they are to suffer attendance issues, behavioral issues, negative effects on coursework, and negative impacts on their health. Oregon Mandate 553, which had great intentions of curbing the school-to-prison pipeline, limits the instances in which students can be suspended fifth grade and under. Effectively, disturbed and violent students are kept in school, but they aren't learning, and teachers can't focus on instruction. These students are disturbing the learning environment for others in their class because they aren't in learning mode. They are in survival mode. Suspension isn't the answer. Wraparound services and community supports are. The bottom line is that we have great intentions for our public school system, but inadequate funding. Oregon schools have the third largest class sizes and one of the shortest school years in the country. When will Oregon students be put first? And when will we see that the fact that graduation rates directly influence Oregon's economy? I know you understand this. I urge you to prioritize education, fully fund wraparound services, prevent further cuts to education, and essentially remove learning barriers for students to become their best selves.
Thank you
so much.
Please, will the next group come forward? And while the two gentlemen come forward, could Kathy Bryan join this group? Kathy Bryan, if you could join this group that's already at the table. And on deck will be Brooke Sanders, Laurel Beigert, and Sandra Craner. It looks like there are two names here, but I can only actually call one on a line. Okay, Sandra. Please begin.
Perfect. Thank you. My name's Lance Colburn. I'm a small business owner in a community. Just some background, I've worked in two different states for small business, and I am also a face of a corporation. So as we've talked about taxation of corporations, I want you to remember not every business structured as a corporation is what I might call a mega corporation, like a Nike or a Fred Meyer or a Walmart. So just keep that in mind as we talk about taxation of corporations that may be putting your small business owner out of business. The reason for my visit tonight is on Senate Bill 301, which is marijuana and the testing of employees for their use of marijuana previous to and during their employment. The concern that I have is that that substance of THC would remain in the body for a matter of time. So I've heard 30 days. As a small business owner in the service industry, I have concerns about that as my employees drive large cargo vans loaded with heavy equipment in our communities. If I allow an employee to drive one of these vehicles and I get in an accident, my current insurance provider tells me that they would cancel my insurance. So I implore you to look at this as not just a human rights thing. If you want to do it after hours and that's your thing, that's fine. But when it starts to affect my business, it starts to affect my bottom line and it affects my livelihood as well. I had an eighth grade history teacher tell me once, your rights end where someone else's begin. When you clock in, or if I choose to have you on as an employee, your rights end in regards to taking someone else's life into their hands while they drive intoxicated with these substances in their body. I want to thank you for this time that I've had, and thank you for being here.
Good evening, and thank you for being here as well. It's very special to be able to practice democracy in your own backyard. Thank you. My name is Kathy Bryan, and I'm here as a voluntary chair of the Jackson County Public Health Advisory Committee. And this, I'm here to talk about a public safety issue that is represented on page 8 of your co-chair's existing resources budget framework. And specifically, I want to focus your attention on the state support for county health departments funding category. I want to make sure that you're aware that the state support for county health departments category is the primary funding source for communicable diseases. and the control of those diseases in the programs here in every county. A reduction in this funding will also reduce the ability to for Jackson County Public Health, as well as other public health entities around the state, to adequately invest and control communicable diseases, including foodborne illnesses, influenza outbreaks, whooping cough, meningitis, and emerging diseases like Zika, and re-emerging diseases like measles. It is a governmental public health that addresses disease control and responds to outbreaks in communities. As such, funding for the local public health communicable disease programs is critical for public safety. To illustrate the importance of local communicable disease programs, in this last November in Jackson County, a middle school student contracted meningitis and was hospitalized at OHSU. Meningitis can be fatal and requires a rapid response to identify close contacts and ensure they get the necessary antibiotic prophylaxis. Working closely with the school district, our communicable disease team was able to quickly identify 79 contacts and confirm they received the needed medication. This swift response helped prevent additional diseases. Meningitis. Thank you.
Please, next person.
Good evening, senators and representatives. My name is Sean Namas, a member of my family's business, Namas Incorporated. We're an integrated grower, packer, shipper of fresh pears here in the valley. And we also pack for other growers here as well, run some small vineyard operation and a small custom crush plant. I'm here today to talk about protecting the economic viability of agriculture in Oregon. Senate Bill 499 is definitely one of the most concerning of the proposed bills this session. This bill would remove pesticide application from the right to farm law, which protects common farming practices from lawsuits and local ordinances. Integrated pest management is vital to our business. We need to use pesticides for weed control, insect control, and protection against fungi. For example, protecting pears against Parasilla and codling moth, and protecting wine grapes against powdery mildew. I urge you to protect the right to farm bill and continue the economic viability of farming in Oregon. As if 499 was enough, Senate Bill 500 is another concerning bill that removes the requirement that before filing a lawsuit that alleges damages for pesticides. Currently, the ODA must be notified before a suit is filed so they can conduct an investigation to see if there's any substance to the claim. If there is, the enforcement action is taken. If not, a frivolous lawsuit is avoided. Farmers do not want protection from actual harm they cause, but from meritless lawsuits. This seems like a clear-cut example of trying to fix something that is not broken. Finally, Bill 2859 can take sections that would eliminate farm and forest use deferral and personal property tax exemptions for irrigation and farm equipment by 2024. Preserving the special tax assessment for EFU land, farm equipment, and EFU home sites is critical to the farming business in this state.
Thank you. Thank you. Next group will please come forward. And while they are coming forward, could I have Devorah Shapiro come forward, Rachel Arthur Waters, and Andrew Gemerken? Please begin.
Thank you. I appreciate you all being here, and I appreciate this opportunity. I agree that our system, which pits all of these valid needs against each other, really needs to be revised. I don't have any answers for that. My name is Laurel Biegert, and I serve on the board of Ashland Supportive Housing. We employ many valuable direct support professionals who support our ID and DD residents. I am also a parent. Our 15-year-old son has significant learning and social challenges. I have asked his permission to share with you. He is a sweet and loving kid, but growing up, he has required constant supervision to avoid serious mishap. He doesn't understand danger or cause and effect. He knows he shouldn't put a plugged-in electrical cord into his mouth, but he only knows he shouldn't do it by my reaction, not because he understands that it's dangerous. At the same time, he works on our farm. He can drive my husband's 4.5-ton skid steer and with consistent precision and mows 3 acres of pasture without a lot of instruction. But his extreme range of ability and disability, he often gets into trouble because expectations are too high, and we all forget his IQ is less than half of the average. Our son has the capacity to be a productive adult someday, but needs a lot of support. We could not have made it this far without Jackson County's K-Plan and personal support workers. With their help, we have given him constant supervision, repetition, and life skills training he needs. He's struggling hard to be more independent, but with second grade math skills and extreme impulsivity, it won't matter that he can drive a skid steer or mow 3 acres if he doesn't have support. With that living and work support, this kid has the ability to be a productive citizen of our community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, please.
My name is Sandra Coyner, and I've lived in Southern Oregon for 21 years. I want to thank you for your roadshow that gives so many of us a chance to be heard. I'm here to request that you approve funding for staff for the legislative task force to create a new system for financing health care delivery in Oregon. This expenditure will be small in the current budget, but the upside potential in the near and medium future is huge. The Oregon's overwhelming budget deficit this year, which you are struggling with, includes a huge spending increase in health care. Why? Because the whole system is broken. It's inequitable, cumbersome, and expensive. Oregon is a pioneer in lowering the cost of healthcare while maintaining quality. We spend far more than other advanced countries on healthcare, but 1/3 of that expense doesn't go to healthcare at all. It goes to administration. Let's cut the fat. Last year, you commissioned and funded the RAND study to begin work on this problem. Full reform is too complex to finish in 2017, but a legislative task force can build on this foundation. A bill to create this task force is in process for this session, and we ask you to staff it. Healthcare for All Oregon, this statewide organization, strongly supports a single-payer system like Medicare for All. Such systems dramatically reduce costs, as even our own RAND study shows. Single-payer treats healthcare as a human right, not a commodity to be sold by manipulating and deceiving consumers to make a profit off their misfortunes. In last November's election, voters in Ashland and elsewhere overwhelmingly supported asking the legislature to fix healthcare financing. 87% approval here in Ashland. Municipalities throughout Oregon are considering and passing resolutions echoing the call. The next step is cheap this year. Finance the task force to continue working for what will be optimal for Oregon. The system can be revenue neutral, requiring no general tax subsidies for health care. And Ways and Means agonies could dramatically reduce in future years.
Thank you very much. You. Yes, please proceed.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being here. My name is Brooke Sanders, and I'm the executive director of Peony Secret Garden. I thank you for hearing me today. We are a local 501c3, and we cater to our most vulnerable community members. I am also my mother's full-time caretaker, right here, Gwendolyn Bornhoff. She suffers from a progressive illness. There's no cure for her illness. Many of my recipients are suffering from disease, and full-time live-in care is essential. My mother has lived in Southern Oregon for 18 years. She was a principal broker in Medford and a past president of the Women's Council of Realtors. She chose to specialize in mobile home sales to assist people that otherwise could not afford traditional housing. The commission was nothing. It was so low, but for her, she felt that helping other folks into a safe home far outweighed her bottom line. Today, I'm here on behalf of all of our community's most vulnerable members who require full-time live-in care. Unfortunately, the state of Oregon has closed this program. That means hundreds of caretakers could lose their jobs or have their hours reduced. Those who have long-term illnesses rely usually on one caretaker, and many times it is a family member. These good people will now lose their income or a good portion of it without the ability to find other income because they still have to care for their people full-time. Changing a patient's caregiver can be extremely detrimental to the patient, especially for those who are suffering from brain illnesses. It is dangerous to their well-being. Mom has worked her entire life. She has paid into our system heartily. She has given back to our community. It seems to me that our most vulnerable folks ought to have the right to be cared for by whom they choose and where. And those who care for them ought to be paid a fair wage within the boundaries of our laws.
Thank you very much. The next group, please come forward. And while they're coming forward, on deck will be Bob Huff, Jim Herndon, and Terry Haynes.
It's Terry Haynes.
Or Haynes. Please begin.
Good evening. My name is Rachel Arthur, and I'm a student leader here at SOU. At 20 years old, I had my first tangible experience with PTSD. I awoke to my husband sitting on top of me with his hands wrapped tightly around my neck while he was calling for his soldiers for backup. As a combat veteran myself, I had already experienced my own inner struggles, though at the time I had no idea what was wrong with me. A year later, my husband was back in Iraq, and I received a phone call that he was being returned home due to injuries sustained in an IED explosion. During treatment, it was discovered that he was in stage 4 cancer. He was exposed to chemicals during his first tour, and it was estimated he had a month to live. 3 years later, at the age of 24, I made the choice to sign a DNR in an attempt to save his life. He passed away a week later. Trying to get my life back to normal, our daughter and I moved across the country, where I settled in Oregon and became a firefighter and a first responder. For 3 years, I helped, guided, and held hands with people during the worst moments of their lives. I stood with them, rescued them, was there for them, with them. For me, my strength is in being there for others and being a person to lean on. And understanding this, I enrolled in a psychology program at SOU. I no longer want to only be with people during those worst moments. I want to help them through them. I am a mother, a widow, a combat veteran, and a student. I am a mother first and a student last. While I am proficient in the resources available to me and using them all, a tuition increase would take food from the mouths of my children. I refuse to allow that to happen. If it does, I will be forced to leave my dreams of higher education behind. As a psychology student, I feel my unique experiences in life have given me a perspective and understanding that very few have. I have absolutely no doubt that I will make a difference in my field of study and my community here in Oregon if given the chance. Please fully fund the public university support fund is $765 or more. Thank you.
Thank you for your service. Next, please. Please.
Hello. I'm Devorah Shapiro, president of the Associated Professors of Southern Oregon University. We thank you for offering us the opportunity to speak in this forum. Southern Oregon University is a regional university tasked with educating Oregonians and our neighbors for success in life, career, and as engaged citizens of our state. We offer unique programs in the arts, sciences, humanities, business education, and nursing. These programs serve industries and communities central to the continuation of a vibrant and flourishing state. Because our students reflect our communities here in Oregon, many come from economically disadvantaged backgrounds, others with obligations as caretakers for children and family members, and still others with a history of service to our country. They all need your support. Our students are faced with rising tuition, and these increasing costs can easily prevent them from beginning their education and will make it impossible for some students to complete their education. We need adequate funding that will allow our students access to affordable education and that will allow us to keep the university healthy so that it can provide the education they need. We ask the state to provide the needed resources to support SOU and higher education. And we ask the industries and corporate beneficiaries of our work and our students' success to contribute their due, pay their fair share, and support our schools. Investment in higher education is an essential element of a productive and healthy Oregon. Without institutions such as SOU and our fellow regionals, residents of Southern Oregon, Central Oregon, rural, farming, and growing Oregon would find their access to education limited. An Oregon industry, which needs an educated workforce, would suffer as well. Our students are the present and the future of this state. And Oregon only benefits by providing the needed resources to keep universities such as SOU healthy and productive, and by providing our students with opportunities to succeed. Thank you.
Yes.
Greetings. My name is Andrew Gamerkin. I'm a junior at Eagle Point High School, and I'm currently serving as the Eagle Point FFA chapter and Southern Oregon District FFA president. I'm speaking to you today to ask for your support of House Bill 2382 and Senate Bill 230. You see, I wasn't raised on a cattle ranch. I don't ride horses, and I've never used a big green tractor. But when I put on my FFA jacket, I knew it was something special, because even though I don't come from a traditional agriculture background, I felt this corduroy hug around my chest in the most comfortable way imaginable. FFA has opened a multitude of doors for me. It's taught me an innumerable amount of skills, such as teamwork, hard work, perseverance, and service. It shaped my goals for the future, and it's even given me the platform for my first job at a local flower shop. Mine is just one of the many stories of how FFA transforms our youth into the leaders of the next generation. Agriculture is the backbone of civilization, and we need more people contributing to this industry. We need to find ways to feed, clothe, and shelter the growing population. FFA and agriculture education is the way to do this. Agriculture education teaches valuable skills and knowledge in the classroom, and FFA provides ways for students to use and further those skills in a hands-on technical setting that leads to college and career readiness. Therefore, I urge you to support House Bill 2382 and Senate Bill 230. If you want to confidently invest in the future of our student leaders, invest in FFA.
Thank you. Please come forward. Next group will come forward. And on deck will be Don Brulan, Bruce Laidlaw, and Erica Holliday. Please proceed.
Good evening. My name is Terry Haynes, and I'm the local chapter chairman of the Non-Commissioned Officers Association and a retired Master Chief Petty Officer in the United States Navy. I want to thank you all for being here to hear us tonight, to take the input, and I want to thank all of you veterans that are on your distinguished panel. The ballot measure 96 is what I really want to talk about. There was an understanding when that ballot measure was put forward that 1.5% of all of the lottery funds that would be allocated to veteran services would be in addition to the general fund. And when I heard from one of your distinguished Representative Sal Escoval that the governor had proposed a budget that was going to reduce the state general fund for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs by $10 million, it just really felt like a gut punch, because that budget or that ballot measure was passed to increase funding for veteran services across the entire state. This nation has been at war for almost 15 years. And we're not that far removed from a lot of other conflicts. Our veterans have so many needs, and this ballot measure was basically passed because it was clear that the needs of all of our veterans and their families were not being met at the current level. So when I did a little bit of research, we found out that the governor did not determine, or she didn't feel that the $10 million reduction that she was proposing was in fact a cut. To her, it was just, you know, some kind of an adjustment or whatever, but it didn't matter. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, please.
Good evening, senators and representatives. My name is Jim Herndon. I'm vice president of Southern Oregon Veterans Benefits. I'm one of the approximately 320,000 veterans in the state of Oregon. I'm also 90% disabled. I did 2 years in Vietnam. I spent 5 years in Iraq working counterintelligence. I'm here in support of Measure 96. It passed by approximately 84% of the state of Oregon. people wanted it passed, and it was their understanding that it was over and above the veterans' budget. Reduction of that budget just kind of reduces it back to where it was. I urge you not to reduce the budget and keep Measure 96 in there. We need help with the veterans. There's some of us that are out of work, some of us that are homeless. Everybody's paid a price. Sometimes you gotta get back, make up for what was lost. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chair, senators, and committee members, representatives. I thank you for being here today. My name is Bob Huff. I am the representative from the American Legion for the state of Oregon. I am very proud of the voters of this state of Oregon that Measure 96 passed so overwhelmingly in our last election. The voters spoke to all of us. The position of the American Legion in this state is simple. Restore the ODVA general funds budget to the requested $10 million and do not use the $18 million generated by Measure 96 dollars from the state lottery. The dedication of lottery funds should be for the supplemental efforts in veterans, as was the decision of the Oregon voters. And I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service. Please come forward. While you're coming forward, I will call Lauren Aldana, Gabriel Brott, and Steve Thorpe. Please begin.
Members of the committee, thank you very much for being here. My name is Bruce Laidlaw. I'm a member of the board of directors for Jackson and Josephine counties. I'm also a CASA volunteer in both Jackson County and Douglas County. Every child who becomes a ward of the juvenile court because of suffering abuse or neglect at home is legally entitled to have a CASA. The basic job of a CASA is to be the voice of a child in court and to protect the legal rights of these children to a safe, stable, permanent home where all their needs are met. You need to understand that every kid who comes into the court system under these circumstances of abuse and neglect is traumatized, they're vulnerable, they're confused, and they're sad. They just don't know what's happening to them and they don't know where to turn. CASA provides critical assistance and support for these children. Unfortunately, however, the program statewide is in a crisis mode because of a lack of funding. In Jackson County alone, for example, 400 kids approximately have CASAs, but another almost 500 are on the waiting list. And this is unconscionable. We need more CASA volunteers, but we can't have more CASA volunteers without the money to train and support them. So I ask you not to turn your backs on these fragile and high-risk children. Only 8% of CASA funding comes from state funds. That's not a very large piece of the pie compared to what other organizations are getting. Everybody has a good cause. I'm not saying this one's better. But I urge you to do everything you possibly can to increase funding for CASA. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Good evening. My name is Erica Halliday, and I am a volunteer with Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon. I'm here because under the current administration, I believe it is more important than ever that Oregon not only maintains access to basic health care, but that we expand access to life-saving and cost-saving reproductive health services for all Oregonians by passing the Reproductive Health Equity Act, House Bill 2232. I ask you to support this bill when it comes to your committee. I grew up in a low-income family. We never really had health insurance. If it weren't for Planned Parenthood and an amazing single mom, I would not be who I am today. I wouldn't have two bachelor's degrees from Portland State University. I may not have graduated from Ashland High School. And I wouldn't have the opportunity to decide when I want to start a family with my husband. As a patient and volunteer with Planned Parenthood, it's affected my life in many ways, from the reproductive services, but also a grant-funded teen theater program in high school that allowed me to educate myself as well as other peers across the state about sexual education. I understand the challenges that you face and that you must make tough decisions in this budget, but I don't believe that you should consider making cuts to essential programs like healthcare, education, and public safety. In fact, we need to support these programs more, and I urge you to reconsider how we generate our state's income, like increasing taxes on out-of-state businesses and large corporations. Measure 97 did not pass, and it is now up to you to figure out how we are going to maintain our budget. Thank you.
Good evening, senators and representatives. My name is Don Bruland. Prior to my retirement, I served as Director of Senior and Disability Services in Jackson and Josephine County for 37 years. Thank you for this opportunity to offer these comments and for your commitment to listening to Oregonians. Today, I am here as an AARP member and volunteer. It was my privilege to participate in the development of Oregon's home and community-based long-term care system, a system built on the principle that seniors deserve to live with independence, choice, and dignity. Our system enables individuals to safely remain as independent as possible while saving Oregon taxpayers tens of millions of dollars each year. It's the envy of other states throughout the nation. I strongly urge the legislature not to balance the budget on the backs of Oregon's vulnerable seniors and people with physical disabilities and on their caregivers. Oregon's long-term care system is cost-efficient, provides valuable jobs, and stimulates local economies. It's cost-efficient in that the state pays roughly 30 cents of each dollar to support Medicaid long-term care services. The other 70% comes from provider taxes and federal matching funds. Every state dollar reduced eliminates two more dollars from the Oregon economy. It prevents future costs. Both Medicaid and Oregon Project Independence help people remain in their homes. This is not only improves the quality of their life, but it also lowers the cost of care to the state. Furthermore, there are 80,000 workers in the state that are employed. Thank you for your time, and I want to say AARP supports a balanced state budget, which includes asking corporations to contribute more.
Please come forward. Okay, and while they're coming forward, I will call up also Robert Diagelis, Tom Karstens, and Fred Gibbs. Please begin.
Members of the committee, thank you for being here today. My name is Lauren Aldana, and I am a senior at SOU. I'm in the Honors College and majoring in political science. I am also on the women's soccer team. While I am here on an academic scholarship, I chose SOU primarily because of the soccer program. I came to SOU fully aware that I probably wasn't going to be playing professionally after my time here, but I think that that's something very special about a small school like this, that you don't get anywhere else. It provides us with a place to compete and perform and also excel in the classroom. With that being said, our teams take competition very seriously, and we travel as far as Montana during regular season, usually on a bus. I chose to stay at SOU because of the community and sense of family that the athletics program has provided. Retention is a technical word we can use here when talking about student completion, but in athletics, we call it getting each other's back and family. When someone is struggling or they're not there, we notice. Here at SOU, the sports lottery funding accounts for approximately 15% of athletics operating expenses. It pays for my coaches and makes it possible for my team to travel. I'm asking you today to please include the sports lottery funding back in the budget. We at small schools depend on it. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you all for coming out today. I've done the Salem to Ashland trek. It's very, very tiring. So the average full-time work week is around 40 hours per week. As a biochemistry major with an economics minor, I Currently, I'm taking 20 hours per week. So with every hour that I take, it's suggested that you have 2 to 3 outside of class. That puts me at around 80 hours per week. As you can imagine, this is quite difficult to balance, especially when you have to pay for a school. So there's a difficult time for students right now. One would think with my kind of schedule, I could envision a bright future for myself. Unfortunately, my future is clouded by crippling student loans. I understand that hard cases make for very difficult and bad policy, so I would not be here today if I didn't think that my case was alone. I'm here today because I believe I'm representing a lot of students. In recent years, the Oregon State Legislature has funded students to go to state schools at around 30%. In the 1970s, this was about 70%. That kind of influenced the economic boom of the 1990s. So currently, according to the new U.S. National Debt Clock, student loans are now account for nearly $1.5 trillion of personal debt in America. This is a result of this increased tuition and the change of fiscal responsibility. This is a huge problem, and none of us are denying it. But the question is how to fix it. I strongly encourage you to look for ways to increase revenue, whether it is excise taxes, capital gains, or sales tax. Thank you very much.
Could you state your name for the record?
Gabriel Brait.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Steve Thorpe. I'm the co-coordinator for the Southern Oregon STEM Hub. And I want to thank you, the legislature, for 2017, as well as the 2013 legislature and 2015 legislature for coming up with funds to support work in a number of critical areas for education. The STEM money in the infrastructure grants that were allocated at that point in time, the STEM innovation grants, the promise grants that dealt with dual credit and accelerated learning, and other grants along that line. I applaud you all for doing that over those two previous legislative sessions. I encourage you to continue that to support out of the 17th legislative session for those same grants, because those grants do provide, as many people have talked about today, the kind of help for the public schools and for the community colleges and for the four-year institutions to help support with the wraparound services from Health and Human Services groups to help young people find pathways through the schools, graduate, and then move into post-secondary success. So I encourage you very much to continue the support for those kinds of things. We in Southern Oregon, with the Southern Oregon Success Regional Achievement Collaborative, together with the STEM Hub, the Early Learning Hub, the Youth Development Programming, that covers three counties, Jackson, Josephine, and Klamath. And we are doing the kind of work that you have outlined for us. We're doing it well, and I think it's effective for us and effective for you to invest in these kinds of things. I'm going to add one parallel request, and that is, as you've heard today, several requests from the public schools, from the community colleges, and from the four-year institutions to invest in education at those levels. We need that kind of education investment so that we can do the kind of work in those collaborative, collective impact areas. And the payback for the economy is very effective because, for example, for the four-year institutions, it's $10 for every $1 invested in terms of return on the economic investment. Thank you very much.
This group should actually be Robert Diedlis, Fred Gibbs, and Tom Karstens.
Well, I'm here.
Okay, I don't see the other two. So could Darren Roche, retired Oregon Youth Authority, come forward to be part of this panel? And Dan Richmond. Okay.
Three more on deck.
Yeah. And three more on deck. Jose Guzman, Joe Vollmer, and William, oh my goodness.
Dropkowitz.
Please proceed.
Hi, my name is Tom Karstens. I'm a retired Marine who lives in the Applegate Valley. I'm a displaced Georgia boy. I love this state, but I'm deeply troubled, and I hope I'm speaking for a lot of Oregonians. by the really big elephant in the room, and that's the $20 billion unfunded PERS liability. For you guys to address this elephant, it's going to take a lot of courage. You're going to skewer a lot of sacred cows, and you're probably going to make everybody in this room angry. But please start looking at this. It's an elephant that's growing bigger every year. We need to get at this. Now, I don't know how big $20 billion is, so while I was waiting in line to come in here, I thought I'd figure out what 20 billion seconds was. 20 billion seconds ago was the year 1382, and the world was flat. I don't envy you your job, but thank you for your service.
Please proceed.
Co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson, thank you for the opportunity. Representative Marsh, Senator DeBoers, nice to see you again. I'm Dan Richmond. I'm a registered nurse. I work at Providence Medford Medical Center. I am also an Oregon Nurses Association member. ONA very much supports preventive services and access to healthcare, and very much supports revenue reform. As a nurse, I see the damage and the issues that arise from not preventing services. You've heard testimony from many people today who explain the importance of not preventing problems early on in childhood and also in our populations who have special needs. We must fund mental health services, preventive services, prenatal services, addiction, substance abuse recovery, and we must maintain access to care. I read through the budget framework, and there's a lot of painful cuts through there, a lot of cuts to preventive-type services. 23,000 Jackson County residents are looking to be cut from Medicaid and access to OHP. Again, that is going to lead to an inability for these people to access very crucial preventive services that prevent much worse problems later on. And we ask that you make sure corporations are paying their fair share and looking at revenue reform. Personally, I work as a float pool nurse. I see patients in the ER, in the intensive care unit, in the med-surg units. I've personally taken care of patients who have attempted suicide or had an overdose. We've had to house those patients for days, weeks sometimes, because we cannot find a safe environment, somewhere to place them. These problems are much better prevented in the first place. And thank you.
Thank you. Will the next group please come forward? And while they're coming forward, Rob Merriman, Christy O'Neill, and Kathy Kemper Pelly.
Hello. Committee members, my name is Jose Guzman. I'm a Army medic, 1970-73. I served in Vietnam. About 4 years ago, I found myself struggling on the streets, homeless, with depression, PTSD, paranoia, substance abuse, and I was fortunate enough that I still maintained enough sense to turn to the VA for some help. And as a result, I ended up in White City down here in Southern Oregon at the VA and was introduced to a nonprofit here in Medford called Compass House, which is a nonprofit a community of adults that struggle with mental illness. And we focus a lot, or mainly our focus is not on what's wrong with the individual, but what our strengths are. And we work with each other and guide each other towards goals, which focus a lot on community resources in the community for housing, employment, healthcare, case management. And through my experiences with the Compass House and through the programming at the Veterans Administration, I found myself in a position in life to where I can draw from my own experiences to reach out to help other people that struggle with the same things that I've struggled with in my life. And you know, that being homelessness and struggling with disabilities, but I find myself volunteering for different organizations, the Kelly Homeless Center, which is a new homeless shelter in the Medford area, and other organizations. But my main, what I'm trying to say is that housing, community programs for housing, disabilities,
much.
You know, are really necessary and really do a great job.
Thank you
are
very much.
Needed
Thank
in
you.
This community.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Please proceed.
Good evening. My name is Joe Volmar. I am the Housing Director for Access in Medford, Oregon. Access is the designated community action agency for Jackson County. I'm here to talk to you this evening concerning funding for affordable housing and reinstating funding for the Oregon Foreclosure Avoidance Program. As you all know, in our community and throughout the state, we are still facing a housing crisis. We continue to face extremely low vacancy rates, as well as high real estate prices, coupled with low inventory within our community. Access sees this need on a daily basis, whether it's people facing foreclosure, needing mortgage payment assistance, rental assistance, or just searching for an affordable unit to rent. We can prevent people from losing their homes through foreclosure counseling. Please fund the Oregon Foreclosure Avoidance Program and other affordable housing initiatives. We believe that everyone in our community and throughout the state should have access to safe, stable, and affordable housing as a prevention of homelessness and poverty. Thank you for your time.
Good evening to all. My name is William Drepkowitz, and I'm here, first of all, as a deaf Oregonian. And I want to thank you all for giving the $200,000 grant. It's a study that does community needs assessment for the deaf and hard of hearing all over the state and run by Western Oregon University. So I want to thank you very much for that. That research has helped find many issues in the state of Oregon. We have a need of access to communication, to medical needs, to legal help, to court, etc. And it would be nice if you guys could help us with our issues, which is, without funding, of course, impossible. So I think that if we could set up some kind of commission or agency coordination for the deaf and hard of hearing for all Oregonians in the state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Will the next group please come forward? And while you're coming forward, on deck I will have Emmanuel Center on school-based health centers. Christina Aiden. And this one. Okay, and Alina Black. Please begin.
Good evening. My name is Rob Merriman, the Community Development Manager for Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development Incorporated and a Southern Oregon native. As the Economic Development Organization for Southern Oregon, SoReady recognizes that the existence of a healthy, vibrant higher education community in Southern Oregon is vital to our standing economically. We need to continue to, offering increasing educational attainment for our local citizens, as well as we need to provide continuing positive, creative educational programs that leverage our local industries. A robust higher education presence is a critical asset in attracting and maintaining good jobs and quality employers in our region. We recognize the difficult task you face on behalf of the citizens of Oregon, but are encouraged that your investment in Southern Oregon University is bringing a tangible return. According to the 2015 SOU Economic Impact Study, $210 million of economic impact is generated by the university annually. looking at the $21 million directed specifically to SOU by the state of Oregon in 2016, your return on investment for every dollar spent is over $10, an ROI of over 1,000%. Additionally, of those who graduated from SOU and went on to work, 70% chose to reside in Oregon and continue to contribute to our economy. It's SoReady's position that especially now, in the challenging fiscal environment that we're in, is the time to invest in Southern Oregon University that generates, not depletes, revenue for the state's budget. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Christy O'Neill. I work as a teacher for Southern Oregon Head Start, and I'm also a proud member of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. I'm here today to speak to you about Head Start funding. Every day, we provide crucial services that benefit the families that we work with, services that we produce through advocacy, education, and coaching of individual families. We serve some of Oregon's most vulnerable populations of families in Southern Oregon. I could preach to you for hours about all of the positive impact that our agency has, but we don't have that tonight, so I'll keep it simple. Our program, Head Start, works. However, with the increase in education requirements and the best practice standards, without a significant increase in funding levels has left us scrambling to find and hire qualified staff and retain them. So I believe this is because large corporations who are not currently paying their fair share. The pot for adequate funds is smaller and smaller. I think tonight it's time to make a choice between early development programs and places that support our local communities and large, mostly out-of-state corporations. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, please.
Good evening. Thank you for being here. My name is Kathy Kemper-Pell, and I represent Josephine and Jackson counties as the president of Rogue Community College. I'm here to share three realities with you this evening. The first reality is for the college itself. The current co-chair's budget of $550 million will result in a $1.9 million decrease for Rogue Community College and in their funding in the next biennium. We will have no choice but to make drastic cuts and to also raise tuition. Our community colleges in this state need a current service level budget of $634 million, and that will only do current service level and help to offset the cost of PERS, health care, minimum wage increases, and other cost drivers. Another reality is that of our students. 82% of Rogue Community College first-time, full-time students are on financial aid. That aid does not cover all of their expenses. They still struggle to cope with the expenses of housing, food, health care, and in some cases, child care. Housing shortages in the Rogue Valley have created affordability and vacancy challenges that have now resulted in an increasing rate of homelessness among our college students. Tuition in Oregon community colleges ranks the second highest in the western states, and it contributes to a lack of college affordability that is causing a widening skills gap and contributing to unemployment in our valley. Many students are having to choose between basic human needs versus the ability to attend college. And the final reality is for the Valley residents themselves. An average of 30% of children in the Rogue Valley are living in poverty. While much of Oregon has recovered from the Great Recession.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Could the next group please come forward? And I'm going to try to call, I did call previously, Christina Aiden. Is she still in the audience? If she is not, I'm going to call Barbara Davidson up to replace her.
Sure. Yeah.
She already testified.
I don't think so. Okay. Please begin.
My name is Annis Olina Black, and I represent the local League of Women Voters of Rogue Valley. The League of Women Voters, OR, legislative action team prioritized revenue and tax reform for the 2017 session, given the $1.8 billion deficit for upcoming biennium. We strongly urge adopting stable and fair revenue policies and tax reforms to adequately fund services and functions critical to the well-being of Oregonians, education, social services, public safety, health care, natural resources, and other vital services. Additionally, tax credits and other legislation that takes away from the revenue, while perhaps a good thing to consider in better times, must be rejected in this session unless additional revenue is provided. We appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Emmanuel Center. I'm a junior at Ashland High and a two-year member of Ashland High School Youth Advocacy Council, and I'm here to ask you to fund school-based health centers. The day I entered sophomore year, I was among the approximately 25% of students in Oregon with access to school-based health centers that identifies as their primary source of health care. Not because I was impoverished or didn't have the resources, but because I found myself in an entirely common situation where my respective guardians spent most of their time at work, as did I. So working a full-time job, my only option was to, like many students just like me all over Oregon, take control of my own life and become responsible for my own health care and well-being right there on campus. In doing so, I became exposed to a whole new realm of proaction. I was given the resource of an on-site mental health provider, and with her help, I was given the intrinsic tools to manage my own life, just as I know has been given to many others before me and will be to many others after me. Just last year, I had a friend by the alias of Hannah tell me sometimes she couldn't breathe under the weight of her life, and sometimes she didn't want to anymore, that she needed help or she might choose not to. I pointed her to the same place that helped me, and with this, I'm led to believe today that that referral may have saved her life. With this, I'm led to believe that my best friend might be a father today if it wasn't for the health providers that came into our class one day, stumbling right into his crisis, explaining the sexual health resources that we had right there on campus. God knows that that one day makes the biggest difference in his situation, and God knows that it's not entirely uncommon either. We are a small community torn by trauma, and I know that the resources given and the love shown, that the services that my small community of 1,100 students were given access to all over Oregon made the biggest difference in the hardest times. And I urge you to consider those in need. I urge you to consider me, Hannah, my best friend, our community, and I urge you to fund school-based health centers.
Thank you. Please.
My name is Barbara Davidson, and I would like to address to Senator Devlin and Representative Nathanson and all the legislators here. Thank you very much for coming to Southern Oregon and to listening to our issues. I am advocating for students in Oregon to get the quality education they deserve and need to ensure Oregon and our country a bright future. I taught high school English and reading for 30 years in the Valley. My three children graduated from public schools in the Valley. In 1990, the youngest child graduated, and the others before that. Two went on to get higher education degrees, and one owns a business with her spouse. However, educational opportunities have eroded over the last 20 to 25 years. In the 73-75 budget period, corporations paid 18.5% of all Oregon income taxes. Today, those corporations pay just 6.7%, a huge decline. The choices made to give corporations a free ride have cost many of our students a quality education. And when I say corporations, I'm referring to the large ones, not small businesses. They are important and they should not be taxed more. that many schools today do not offer the basics, the range of courses to meet student needs, librarians, music, art, and physical education specialists, nurses, counselors, technical or career classes in welding, mechanics, carpentry, and so on, all of which help in developing well-rounded individuals. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may have noticed that I did not call anyone up on deck. Unfortunately, our time has expired. We want to thank each and every one of you on behalf of your legislature and on behalf of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Thank you very much, and this concludes our hearing.